going down every road, planting seeds just to watch them grow.
Y'all heard the song, so you know you're in the right place. This is Song of the Soil, an audio educational series on soil science, where we pair music and soil science together, you know, to keep you interested. I'm your host, Dr. Jake Maurer. This episode of Song of the Soil is titled Forensic Soil Science / Digging in the Dirt. We're going to cover a fascinating, at least fascinating to me, subdiscipline in soil science called Forensic Soil Science. And I want to provide this warning ahead of time. It's not too bad. The details are not overtly gory, but sensitive listeners will need to be aware that there is a brief discussion of actual crimes where people have been killed and some description of how their bodies were buried in the earth. Okay. First, imagine that a crime has been committed and the perpetrator used soil to bury some kind of evidence or interacted with soil and it became evidence of where they had been. The knowledge that a soil scientist has about soil physical, chemical, and biological properties may and can be used to tie that evidence to a crime and strengthen the case of facts against the criminal. Different soils have unique characteristics in terms of simple things like color, texture, and mineral composition that can be used to pinpoint its location of origin. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the author, famously used this principle in his Sherlock Holmes mysteries. The character of Watson once said in a story, "A study in scarlet," that Holmes could, quote, "tell at a glance different soils from each other. After walks, he has shown me splashes upon his trousers and told me by their color and consistence in what part of London he had received them." Well, there are a handful of examples like this scattered throughout the Sherlock Holmes lexicon, and frankly, it makes me think very highly of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. In the Five Orange Pips story, for example, Holmes has an exchange with a young man just coming in from the rain. He says, "Give me your coat and umbrella. They may rest here on the hook and will be dry presently. You have come up from the southwest, I see." "Yes, from Horsham," replied the young man. "That clay and chalk mixture which I see upon your toe caps is quite distinctive." You know, the Sherlock Holmes stories, they were written between like 1891 and 1927. They were and continue to be immensely popular, right? They've been retold and modernized. They almost certainly, back in the time, inspired the French criminologist and pioneer in forensic science, Dr. Edmond Locard. He is the one who's credited with establishing a fundamental principle in forensic science. It's called Locard's exchange principle, and it states, whenever two objects come into contact, there was always a transfer of material. Now, this could be restated as, every contact leaves a trace, or a criminal always brings something to a crime scene and always takes something away. These things are factual evidence that can be used against the criminal. And sometimes these things are soil. All right, so it would be fair if you were thinking right now that this could be some CSI level stuff right here, and you would be 100% right. In his very cool book, Evidence from the Earth, Forensic Geology and Criminal Investigation, Raymond C. Murray, maybe the modern day father of forensic soil analysis, laid out the case for soils and geologic materials as the basis for providing factual evidence related to a crime. The minerals, he said, or combination thereof contained in a soil can be used like a fingerprint or like DNA to establish a certain unique location of an event determined by the transfer described by Locard's exchange principle. However, there are many ways soil can be part of a crime scene investigation, not just when stuck to the bottom of a boot or smeared or splashed onto clothing. A geologic outcrop or patch of soil observed in a video may be used to gather intelligence on its location. And while visual observation has been the mainstay of forensic soil science for decades, increasingly modern, cutting-edge and highly technical instrumentation for chemical analyses are giving us better and more detailed insights about the soils involved in crimes. And that brings me to our guests for the episode. Dr. Jackie Aikenhead-Peterson, retired soil and water chemist, and former colleague of mine in the Department of Soil and Crop Science at Texas A&M University, will be here to tell us about her work in forensic soil analysis. Jackie and I hit it off back in the day, and so this is a pretty good interview. And Dr. Rob Fitzpatrick of the University of Adelaide, Sydney, Australia. I believe he might be Interpol's first call for soil forensics investigation. A true episode of Accents. And let us not forget our song for the episode. Tying this subject together is Peter Gabriel's 1992 hit, Digging in the Dirt. Now, according to Mr. Gabriel, the lyrics were very personal and related to his process of emotional healing through talk therapy at that time. The song reached number 52 on the Billboard Top 100, which I think in retrospect was a little surprising to me because I remember the video for the song being played like constantly on MTV at the time. It had that sort of stop-motion animation that Gabriel featured in earlier hits, Sledgehammer and Big Time. The video was directed by John Downer and won the Grammy for Best Short-Form Music Video in 1993. I really remember it because it had this sort of creepy vibe where in one scene Gabriel was buried alive in the soil and in another one he was consumed by plants growing over him. He's got snails and bugs crawling on him, and later he's being decomposed into a skeleton. Later after this, he's buried in the sand on the beach through what looks like, you know, wind deposition. After this, some mushrooms emerge and grow around from his body, forming a silhouette of his body, which is, at this point in the video, surrounded by police tapes about 4 minutes in. By the end, his corporeal body is reformed. There are strawberries and flowers, and we might think that the healing process has been completed and rejuvenation is successful, right? So this stop-motion animation gives all the imagery a feeling of time passing, right, while the decomposition happens. And so while the song is ostensibly, at least according to Mr. Gabriel, about talk therapy and healing, to me, the distinct imagery that he chose to use as a metaphor for that dominates the video, and it's really on the nose for the subject of this episode. And the final refrain repeats the phrase, digging in the dirt to find the places we got hurt. So it just really makes me think of a crime scene and the process of sifting through whatever, dirt, metaphorical or literal, you know, to get the evidence needed to convict. And going back to the lyric in that refrain, digging in the dirt, We commonly use this phrase, digging the dirt, digging in the dirt, digging up dirt, to refer to the process of discovering, exposing, and revealing evidence of wrongdoing, in journalism and criminal investigations. So you get the point, right? And that's why I chose this song. So let us listen to a bit of that song now. First of all, if you could just tell us who you are and why you come to know about forensic soil science or forensic soil analysis.
Okay, my name is Dr. Jacqueline Aitkenhead Peterson. I'm a Brit, a transplant, and being a Brit, I grew up with Sherlock Holmes. I also grew up with a father that had a horticulture, small holding type thing. So I've always loved soil, and I also loved crime, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I decided I wanted to be a soil scientist. I got my undergraduate at the University of Stirling in Scotland, my master's in soil science at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. Then I came over to the USA, did my PhD in natural resources, where I looked at soil and water chemistry. I recently retired from Texas A&M in 2021, where I'd introduced a soil forensic science program. I think it was about 2009, I talked to the teaching head of department, Wayne Smith, and I said, I really want to teach forensic soil science. Are you okay with that? And he's like, give it a go. So we ended up with tons of kids in the class. A lot of them have gone on to do forensics. A lot of them that were doing forensics ended up coming into soil. So we had this nice kind of crossover.
What exactly is forensic soil science?
Well, forensic soil science is called trace evidence. And it's typically the study and comparison of the mineral portions along with any man-made materials that are in that soil. So those man-made materials can be glass, paint, building materials. Sometimes a necklace that becomes part of that soil. So if you have a stone from a necklace that's a particular turquoise, for example, and you find fractions of that same turquoise material on the soil of a suspect's boot, that helps you even more state that, yes, we've got a really good match for this soil. So for me, forensic soil science is two things. And the first thing is matching soil from either clothes, boots, wheel arches of trucks, to a crime scene where somebody's been raped, murdered, assaulted. Or it can be looking at a decomposition site, which is rather what the song that you were talking about was getting to. So decomposition of human remains. Those are the things that really excite me the most, the decomposition of human remains and how it changes soil chemistry. And the changes in soil chemistry are then important at determining the post-mortem interval.
So that's what I remember from our conversations. And when I read about forensic soil analysis or forensic geology, I'm reading almost exclusively a focus on, say, the identification of mineralogical properties that can be associated with a location of a crime or the location of a person who had committed a crime. And I remember from our conversations that you were more interested in how the chemistry of the soil changes following decomposition. And maybe you could follow up a little bit more with that.
Yeah. So at the body farms, the bodies put out, and it depends on the time of year. You've also got to think in terms of any soil forming factors. So we've got 12 soil orders you mentioned in one of your podcasts. And that makes a difference as well in terms of the purge fluid. So the body's put out. If it's really hot in the summer, it's not shaded, that body will blow up, if you like, and then the purge fluids come out of the rupture in the skin. Once those purge fluids are in the soil, that's when the excitement starts. So what we're going to get is a huge concentrations up to 7,000 to 9,000 ppm of organic carbon compared to a normal concentration or ambient concentration of 50 to 100 ppm. So huge increases in organic carbon, organic nitrogen, ammonium. You see a decrease in nitrate in the soil. Now, that was interesting because most of that purges water. So you're saturating that soil and you're making it anaerobic. So with the anaerobic conditions, that nitrate is driven off as gases. And the nitrate or the ammonium cannot convert to nitrate until that soil is aerated again, either by roots or animals burrowing. And that comes in at about 9 months to 1 year after that body's been placed or dumped.
Ooh. All right. So obviously, Dr. Jackie is very knowledgeable about the subject. She's done a lot of work, and she actually taught a university-level course on forensic soil science. So I've asked her to give us a little details about her teaching experiences.
Oh, no. The very first year, 2009, I taught it. I had about 9 students. And then the last 3 to 4 years, so we're looking at 2018, 2017 through 2021, we were up to 40 or 50 students in the class.
What would you say was generally their favorite aspect of the class?
The lab work. I'm very keen on students getting their hands dirty. So, you know, they would cover things like soil color. How do we see color? So every student had to bring their alibi soil. So they had an email on the 4th of July weekend saying, you are now a suspect. One of the class members has gone missing. We can't find her. I need where you were on the 4th of July, and I need a soil sample, and this is how you take it, you know. So they had the direction. So coming first day of class, they've all got their little Ziploc bag of soil, and we use that soil throughout the class. So we look at soil color, They looked at size distribution, microscopy, what different things they would find in soil, what is the soil particle shape and size. And then we had a couple of outdoor type labs. One was vehicle vacuuming, so they would have to vacuum a vehicle, and you know, I'd put different soil particles out there and they would give presentations on that. But I think the best was just coming up to Halloween, I'd have my skeleton and I'd do a scattered bones scenario. Two or three of the soils that they would bring, I would wet down, put on boots, and I would also take a sample from that site where the muddy, where the skeletal remains were, and put on boots. So now they've got 3 to 4 pairs of suspect boots, and they have to match those suspect boots to that site using some of the things that they had learned in the labs.
Oh my goodness, why didn't I take this course? Why didn't I audit this course while you were working? That sounds like so much fun. So no wonder, like, yeah, they like these hands-on activities, right? So, all right, I'm going to use a soil pun here and also a pedagogy term in one thing. What was their muddiest concept, do you think, just in general, where we challenge the students to tell us what they had the hardest time understanding about the course, the muddiest concept?
I'm a good teacher.
That's a great answer.
There was nothing muddy, you know, open door policy. You know, if you don't understand something, just come hang out.
All right, then part C of this question is, what was your favorite part of the course?
The scattered bone scenario. I used to love doing that. We'd do, because I also used to teach at Sam Houston State, training school teachers for doing their own classes in forensic soils, and also law enforcement, how to take soils properly. So we'd have this scattered bones type scenario. How do you take the soil? And the big question is, what is your question? Do you want to take a soil sample to match somebody's boots, or do you want to take a soil sample to figure out how long this body's been here? And they're different.
Okay, well, I hope that was illuminating for you. Like I said, Dr. Jatke's a lot of fun to talk with, and she knows her stuff. Our next guest today is Dr. Rob Fitzpatrick. And when he and I met, you know, there's quite a few hours difference between where I work in Texas and where he works in Adelaide, Australia. So it was very early in the morning for me on a very cold winter's morn, and it was very late at night for Rob Fitzpatrick.
If you're ready to dive in, I can go ahead and
I'm ready. Yep. Yep.
All right.
Yes. Okay, so I'm a pathologist, soil scientist, but have specialized in forensic geology and soil science.
So how did you become involved in this particular area of soil science?
Okay, so in about the year 2000, there was a murder up in our hills, in the hills of just above Adelaide, which is in South Australia. And the police could not find what had happened. But what they had discovered was that a vehicle ran out of petrol, or what you call fuel, gas, rather, you call gas, would be about 200 kilometres from where this person had apparently committed quite a serious crime, and in fact, a double murder. And he ran out of petrol, or out of gas. They opened up the boot of his vehicle and they discovered boots with soil on them, a shovel, and a bracelet and all that sort of stuff in the boot of his vehicle. So the police at that time thought that he'd buried the two people that he had supposedly murdered, which is his mother and his grandmother. They had assumed that he'd buried them in the beach area, about 200 kilometers away from where he lived.
Right, but apparently that's not where he really buried them. I think we should find out more.
And so they spent a whole week searching this particular peninsula, and eventually they just gave up. So they contacted me, being a soil scientist and more interested in pedology and where soils occur, and they said to me, well, look, we're pretty desperate. Could you tell us where you think the soil might come from? They showed me the shovel, and I had one look at the shovel and basically said to them, well, I can tell you now that, in fact, it does not come from where you guys, where the police have been searching. And they said, well, how's that? I said, well, first of all, the soil that we're looking at is acid, because I measured the pH there and then and looked at it in detail. And, in fact, the soil particles looked as though they came from a quarry. And all the quarries where they were looking would be sand that would come up from the coastal area. So I persuaded them that very clearly the place that they should be looking should be in a particular area where the soils are acid, and that it likely is not actually a soil, but it's from a quarry where they mine sort of gravel. Because everything on the shovel looked like it. And I said to them as well, it's very likely that, in fact, it comes from a wet area, because the shovel was already rusting and it was compacted. To cut a long story short, I found a wet area, sampled the soil there, compared it with the shovel, and it was exactly the site that turned out later to be where these two bodies were buried. Now, The trouble was that the police quickly sent in police dogs and people on horseback and all that sort of stuff to look in this area, and polluted the area, which meant the dogs could not sniff out. So one single detective who comes from a farming background said, look, I'll tell you what, I believe what robbers said. A lot of the other detectives said this is just a silly story. And I suggested to them that that's where they should be looking. This particular farming policeman suggested that he will go there every morning, and because it was within a two-week period, the foxes would likely dig up the body. With two days after that, the fox dug up the one body, and 2 days later, the other body, and that solved quite a major crime. We x-rayed the soil, and we published this in numerous places. It's been in textbooks, it's been all around the world, become quite a famous case study. Now, that was the first one we did. Based on that information, the forensic community said, look, we are going to need forensic soil science and forensic geology. Would I be prepared to set up a center of forensic soil science? And they said they will sponsor it, and that's what happened.
If I could just go back to your story, has anyone made the comment before that, I mean, this is an arrogant, you know, criminal, a murderer who's challenged the police, and then he's literally outfoxed by a fox?
Exactly. Oh, that's quite a clever pun. I had never thought
no
of that.
One's, yeah, yeah. No one has said that before? Okay.
No.
I'm claiming that.
Claim it, because, in fact, the police, there's been a lot written up about it. So.
That we learned.
You were such good listeners. We don't hang out dry on your own. We're bringing it all back home.
Hey, once again, you've proven to be very good listeners. Congratulations. I hope you all found this episode of Song of the Soil to be very illuminating. I know I did. What we learned today from Dr. Peterson and Dr. Fitzpatrick is that soil science as a career can lead you in some cool directions. Now, there's nothing cool about stealing from another person or harming, and certainly not murdering another person. However, our guests today have shown us that soil science not only solves crimes, but is currently used to develop the prosecutorial evidence necessary to bring justice to those who forget that soils will get you every time. And that's because, you know, a soil's not a soil. It's not a soil. What I mean is that the variability in soil type, particle size, chemical properties, etc., while taken for granted by most folks, it's like a fingerprint each soil has when a soil scientist looks at it. We learn that particle size and type can pin down a location. We learn that the chemistry of body decomposition can tell us about how long a body has been placed there and what condition it probably was at the time of placement. Nowadays, we use the same types of instruments to perform this detective work as we use in other branches of soil science. It's things like microscopes, X-ray diffraction, colorimetry, mass spectrometers, inductively coupled argon plasma atomic emission spectrometers. As Dr. Peterson said, both the sampling and the analyses required are going to be a product of the question you are trying to answer. Both of our guests today, when asked about the current challenges and opportunities for forensic soil science and forensic geology, told me, we need to focus on training the next generation of professional practitioners and innovators. That the job is rarely full-time, though, so you only work when a crime needs solving. Therefore, professionals will probably need to be diversified as soil scientists. Now, if you want to know more, pick up a book. Evidence from the Earth by Raymond C. Murray, perhaps. If you are enrolled in an institute of higher education, check and see if there is a forensics class you can take. These are often cross-departmental elective credits, so may count for you. Read the papers by our two guests. Dig a hole in your backyard. Make sure you call the utilities first to avoid hitting water or electrical lines. Who knows what you'll find when you go digging in the dirt. For our thank yous today, we'll close with Ignatz's version of Digging in the Dirt. Thanks today, as always, to Ignatz Cicati, our musical curator and director. Thank you so much to Mr. Chase Bourne for donating his fiddle skills. Talented musician. Thank you, Brother Chase. Thank you to Dr. Jackie Aikenhead Peterson and to Dr. Rob Fitzpatrick. And thanks for being such good listeners, y'all. I do want to mention that there's a couple of interesting things about the original version of Digging in the Dirt. Well, to me anyway. The guitarist on that was Leo Nozzentelli, who made a name for himself, as some of you might be aware or not be aware, with his band the Funky Funky Meters out of New Orleans. So do not hesitate to check out the Meters. Remind yourself of how great they were. Check them out if you've never heard them as soon as we are done here. Very funky guitarist. The drummer was Manu Katchu, and you can find his excellent and interesting jazz fusion stuff all over the interwebs as well. Those are going to be my recommendations for today, so don't sleep on that. Y'all have a great one. Digging in the dirt, stay with me, I need support.
It's almost using standard methods. Now, where things are different here are in two ways. First of all, you're dealing with the law. And as soon as you deal with the law, you then have to go to court. And as soon as you have to go to court and you've got to face defense lawyers, judges. It's a completely different discipline. So what happened in my case, I was very lucky in that at the time, the forensic people that helped us set the center up said, look, Rob, the first thing you need to do is you need to be trained to go to court. You need to be trained in forensic methods. So that the two things that I had to learn and develop were, first of all, what you do in a legal scenario. So what happens is they run training courses where they actually, you spend whole weekends in a courtroom and they teach you about giving evidence, what you do, what you don't do. I mean, the common scenario is don't be arrogant, be very careful of what you say, and then the next part of it was the chain of custody of sample. Now that part of it is really critical because you can do this amazing work, but if you haven't actually documented carefully where the samples come from and where they are stored, everything is just thrown out by these very, very clever defense lawyers. I mean, these people are trained effectively to trick you up. So in the guideline manual we wrote, the whole section's in there about the chain of custody. Chain of custody means how you collect the sample, how you store the sample, what's the best way of storing a sample.
When you don't have insect access, and we tested this with swine just north by Snook College Station, and it was very difficult trying to get that paper out because the reviewers were saying, oh, you're calling the flies vampires now, you know. Well, if they don't have access to the body, the purge fluids are much, much higher in nutrients. And this is exactly what had happened to this little kid. So you had that exothermic reaction, no flies, huge amounts of nutrients in the soil, and the type of lime that was used in the burial.
I thought that
was exciting.
That is really good. So you developed mineralogical formations, mineral formations resulting from the application of the burnt lime. And then the chemistry of the nutrients to both. It's like two different ways you're supporting.